Thank you for tuning in to Awani Review. My name is Cynthia Ng, and joining me today is Dr. Azura Rozila Hamad. She is a consultant medical oncologist at Beacon and Avicenna Hospital. Thank you so much, Dr. Azura, for making time to speak with me.
Hi, Cynthia. Thank you for asking me to be here.
Now, Dr. Azura, on this show, I usually speak with people in the fields of entrepreneurship to talk about topics from leadership to management. So this is quite a special episode because we want to focus on breast cancer, as October is the Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and we want to highlight leaders such as yourself who are working at the forefront, not just creating awareness, but also supplying that education, information, tools, and even training to empower people, women especially, and breast cancer survivors. So I just want to start with that. Can you just give us a brief background of yourself, Dr. Azura?
Yeah, sure. Hi. Thank you for asking me to be here. I am an oncologist, a medical oncologist. So my day job is really seeing cancer patients. I do see various cancers, but particularly breast cancer is the most common cancer in Malaysia, is very common. So awareness for disease is extremely important. And so I am glad to be here to be invited. And I hope I could explain to the public the different angles and all the new developments that have come to fore, because really we are talking about modern cancer treatment that works and based on science. And that's what I would like to talk about today.
Sure, we'll get to that a bit later in the show. I want to start with what has been happening for the past 2 years. Of course, conversations about COVID-19 have dominated headlines around the world, but we need to shine a light on cancer and cancer treatment, cancer awareness, especially breast cancer, which I understand make up about one-third of all cancer among women in Malaysia, about 34%. Talk to us about the situation in Malaysia.
Yeah, of course, sure. So the thing is, Malaysia is a middle-income country, and you know what in the past have been thought as a disease of developed nations has really come to be a pandemic. And we had this breast cancer pandemic even before COVID-19 became a world pandemic. Certainly, WHO, through their research agency, International Agency of Research in Cancer, has actually started a global initiative about women cancer, particularly breast cancer, which actually have exceeded lung cancer in terms of the most number of cases being diagnosed every year. And this is what has come out in December of 2020. And it's certainly a very important disease, because in the world, 1 in 6 in Malaysia, I mean, our statistic is really not quite up to date. It's actually about 10 years old. And even so, I mean, you said the percentages. It's more what according to 2007, 2011, we're talking about nearly 20% of cancers is breast cancer. It causes a lot of death, Malaysia and worldwide. And WHO has brought it up that this should be a public health priority, because when you say there's so many cases, there are also a lot of death, and it's not just a disease that kills. It has got ramification in terms of your social, economic, manpower, the whole thing. It's a huge health burden, and cancer treatment is extremely expensive. So we need a good awareness from start to finish, from whole aspects of cancer journey, to deal with it, to help our population to deal with this disease.
Now, with any sickness, early detection is so important, especially cancer. I want to bring up this data from the National Cancer Registry between 2007 and 2011. It says that about 43% of women discover breast cancer at stage 3 or 4. But between 2012 to 2016, that number has increased to about 48%. So people are discovering breast cancer at a more advanced stage. So I'm just curious here, with more awareness being done on breast cancer, why are Malaysian patients discovering the disease at a much later stage?
Yeah, I think it's very hard to know exactly what's going on. I mean, our registry, as you know, it's not current. And even when it came out to the public, it came quite late. So for us to identify areas of priority, problem areas, and which area is of priority for us to take action, it's very hard to kind of make a good cancer plan. The awareness has increased. As you said earlier, I mean, there was a lot of things that you said, early detection saves lives. And that is really part of the success of improving survival. And you see that in health systems of countries, obviously high income countries, where they have invested a lot of money, not just health promotion, putting into place early detection and, you know, expertise to ensure the detection is fast, the quality of care is good, and so on and so forth. So it is a loaded question, and we don't know. There are so many. It could be a cultural thing, but awareness is, health promotion is first step. Yeah.
I think this is why we're doing this discussion today, because we want women to take charge, you know, to be the leader for themselves, for their health. So can you provide some guidance on when a woman should start performing breast screening, and how often to screen, and when you stop?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So really, based on the data, of local data, obviously we want data that counts for us. You see that incident. This is actually available in public domain. You can have a look at it. You can see the incidence really start from mid-30s. So we have a clinical practice guidelines, which is produced by the Ministry of Health. And, you know, it is advising women to be empowered and starting to check your breasts from mid-30s. You know, breast examination, actually, it's a little bit subjective. You know, obviously, are you used to knowing what lump is a serious lump, which is not. So you do breast self-examination, but you also need to go for a process called screening. And screening is what really has been proven to detect early breast cancers. And you can understand that if you examine your breast with your hands, you know, with trained hand or untrained hands, you might not detect those tumors, those lumps that are small. So what does screening mean? Screening is detecting something before you know it's there. So hopefully it's early. So you do screening. So if a woman, if you're an average risk, you know, there's many definitions what risk it is. So in Malaysia, if you look at our MOH, Ministry of Health guidelines, advocating mammogram at age 50, and it's because health resource is very precious. There's no such a country that have unlimited health resource, maybe a few with small populations, but for Malaysia, from age 50 is every other year, and you can go on until mid 70s perhaps. And most international countries, for example, the American Cancer Society, they have a far higher incidence of breast cancer. Women there would be advocated to start screening age 40, mid 40, 45 annually. However, just as Malaysia and also in internationally, you have a choice. You can speak to your doctor to get your mammogram done at age 40 annually. And again, it goes on until as long as the woman is well, and maybe start to do it every other year, maybe in mid-60s and so on. But again, that's for average risk. So you need to understand, if you have a lot of family history, anything, or especially if a higher risk, so there's family members or close to you, or you know, second degree, we call it, not directly related to you, and there are many people in your family, or any, there are a few criteria for that, you could get an earlier participation into screening processes.
I have done, of course, personal self breast examination, but I've yet to go into doing a proper screening, a mammogram, and I'm in going into my late 30s now. So what are your recommendations, you know, for somebody who's watching this about my age, let's say, and if you would go for a mammogram, which is abnormal, or what's next? What's the next course of action?
So, you know, there's nothing perfect in this world. Even if you do, mammogram is considered gold standard. However, you know, maybe one in six of breast cancers can be missed, simply because mammogram is an X-ray. If you have seen a mammogram before, it's black and white. So white, it could be, you know, dense breast tissue, or maybe tumors can kind of hide in between the whiteness of the black and white background. So usually there are a couple of things that that should be done. I mean, certainly the way to go is to get yourself checked annually by a trained professional. it could be a doctor or a specialist breast nurse, and getting an annual mammogram, as indicated before. So you're right, nothing is perfect. Sometimes the mammogram is supplemented by an ultrasound, and if there's indication, they might have different kind of imaging called an MRI, which is a different kind of way of imaging, we call it, taking a picture of your breast. So of course the self-examination is there to empower you. There has been some problems with it. Some people don't believe it helps, but I think it's empowerment, as you said before. We need to encourage that kind of the right mindset, the right sort of step towards detection and early diagnosis. You should see a doctor. There's a lot. I mean, Malaysia is a middle-income country. We have health centers. Go to a place that you could trust, that you could rely on, and get the proper assessment.
What are your thoughts about accessibility to this type of screening healthcare? Talking about this from a public point of view, right, as someone maybe who have limited financial resources to do so, what are your thoughts about what has been provided in Malaysia? Is it sufficient?
It is. Screening is anything. Our health system has its constraints. But I think there are free events, usually in October, where there will be free mammograms around. Of course, this year I'm not quite sure what is happening due to COVID-19 pandemic, but it's there, and there are a lot of NGOs who participate in it. You speak to your local GPs. You know, there's websites also to be checked. But there are, and there are mobile clinics as well, mobile mammograms as well. So there are the Malaysian is not as inaccessible as we think. But I think awareness and encouraging people to do it, that is another cultural barrier that we are still struggling even now.
And if someone is diagnosed to have breast cancer, what are the forms of treatment available? What is the most common question to you then? And what's the next step?
I mean, the first, it's such a huge diagnosis. The first is always confirmation. And usually we call it a triple assessment, where it looked like breast cancer, it has to be confirmed by some kind of imaging, and finally, what we call tissue diagnosis. We call it a biopsy, where you take a snippet of the tissue where we see under the microscope the presence of cancer. And that's really the proper definition of confirmed breast cancer. So the common question is always the stage. So people know already early staging has better outcomes, and that would be a main question. I'm an oncologist. That is the question that people ask. Am I going to be cured? Is it localized? What stage it is? That sort of thing. I mean, so in this modern era, it's not just knowing cancer or not. We also need some understanding of the features of the cancer. This is really what we call molecular understanding of what's driving the cancer. So these are specialized testing, and depending on which health systems you avail, it could be on request rather than on reflex, because cancer is uncontrolled growth. And if it's not reflex, you're just like, okay, step one, what to do, and then you request step two, it does takes time. And that could be detriment in terms of treatment success. And if the disease is localized, surgery is very much part of treatment. We are not leaving any breast lumps in the breast. By all means, we are doing less, meaning that if the you can conserve the breast, you should leave the breast. And sometimes if it's too large, we will try to give some treatments first to make it shrink, and then there might be radiation or even drug treatments like chemotherapy or even hormone therapy. But essentially, treatments can be less complicated if the disease is not so extensive, it hasn't spread out. It's not as simple as that. We have now having to look at the features of the breast cancer and understanding the expression or the cancer genes to decide whether this is going to be a very problematic cancer that should be given, with high risk of recurrence. So there are more understanding, and we are moving more towards personalized precision treatment for patients to decide on the optimal treatment. I mean, it is really complex, and it require, you know, surgeons, radiologists, pathologists, oncologists, you know, and so on. So psychologists sometimes. It's a huge, you know, socioeconomic burden to people.
What's really important here, as you've mentioned, that the earlier you detect, there's a higher chance of survival, and there's probably a less
complicated treatment. Yes.
I want to talk a bit about the kind of therapy or treatment that's available. Technological advances have created new opportunities for improvements in both screening and also early detection. What do you consider to be the most exciting advancement in the field of breast cancer, breast health in the last couple of years?
Oh gosh, that's a fully loaded question. I mean, oncology is rapidly expanding, and there's huge amount of drugs that is based on science and understanding of cancers. And you are breaking barriers, you know, improving outcomes, more successful treatment. I mean, essentially what makes the difference is people knowing that they're going to live longer. And I think I just have to step back and just look in countries, high income countries, they spend a lot of money, and they have, you know, they incorporate innovative treatments. And we know that innovative treatments with better surgery or better drugs and so on will has actually improved their outcome. And if you actually see the statistics in the West, or in high-income countries, the five-year survival is reaching 90% for breast cancer. Whereas in Malaysia at the moment, I mean, whatever data we have, we're about 66%. So, I mean, it is a population, you know, it is, you know, you would question where we got the data from, but we know in our heart that we need to do more. We have to embrace innovation, but of course, it is at a cost, and I don't think any health system could sustain, especially ours, who is, you know, recovering after COVID-19 pandemic. We need to find a way of a sustainable, cost, affordable healthcare to ensure that our population is well looked after.
So, I mean, like you said, that we have focused so much on the pandemic for the past 2 years. What would you like to see happen in the field of oncology, particularly for breast cancer treatment and therapy in Malaysia in the next couple of years?
Yeah, oh, that's a really big question. So what we need to have is really a commitment of improving our cancer control. So it's a huge question. I think the first thing, I mean, it's not just best treatment, most expensive treatment, and so on. It has to start from the beginning. We need to ensure the health promotion is there, so we can start at the adult level, community level, in the school, health promotion awareness, and so on. So we need to really incorporate a system where we could have early detection. So we need to identify who are at risk groups so that we could target those people. So, I mean, obviously we can go by age for that. So in terms of the next thing is the diagnosis, we need to have a system to ensure that if there is a concern, there is a process to ensure that we can diagnose it quickly, a timely diagnosis. And when we deliver the care, it has to be a quality care that is affordable, and to reduce fair treatment for everyone. And it doesn't really matter whether you are, you know, getting treatment in a government hospital or in a private hospital. So it's hoped that the treatment will be, you know, quality care, timely, delivered in a timely manner. The thing is, there's so much developments in breast cancer now, even in diagnostics and equipment and technology. We also need to invest on manpower to make sure that we have adequate health professionals who can deal with it. And at the end of it, actually, it is such a huge, it's a huge area. It requires drugs, you know, involving stakeholders, pharmaceutical companies, to and researchers, experts, and even NGO, and also participating in WHO initiatives to really to commit to a cancer control plan and to formulate a cancer plan that works for Malaysia, because it's all cancer care is extremely expensive. We need to figure out some way of having a sustainable fiscal sustainability, because I don't think any health system could bear the cost of cancer. So that's why it starts from the beginning, from not just reducing the cases of breast cancer, you know, health promotion extremely important, to diagnosis, to quality care, getting the right treatment, because it makes a difference. Because ultimately, if you have a huge cancer burden, you know, you have less, you know, manpower, families are destroyed, you know, it's so we need to have to think a bit differently and try to find, because the way it is right now, I think a lot of our patients are missing on all these innovative treatments. So we need to get the right treatment to the right patient somehow, by collecting data, understanding where is the area of focus, where we should be prioritizing, and so that we have a more, and then we could invest on those areas.
Right. So three things. So one is awareness. Secondly is to identify high risk individuals, and also in investment in innovation and technological advancement in the area.
Yes, amongst others. I'm sure I missed something, but that is so huge.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you so much for giving that perspective. We just have a couple of minutes left. I would like to ask you about your advice. If you could give women any piece of advice regarding their breast health, what would it be, Dr. Azura?
So breast cancer risk factors are the things that you could do to reduce the chances of getting cancer. Unlike cervical cancer, which we know vaccination can improve, can reduce the incidence, we don't really have one specific cause that could reduce a woman's risk of getting breast cancer. And the thing about breast cancer is that it will be a multiple factors that could attribute someone's risk. But having a risk factor does not necessarily mean that you will get breast cancer. And surprisingly, it's nothing that is too wild, actually. So things that could help breast cancer would be actually maintaining a healthy weight. I'd have to say this because in the pandemic, I'll see the Grab people are very busy. So, you know, you need to be careful about your intake. You need to eat more plant-based food. Exercise has been proven to reduce breast cancer. And for cancer patients, it can also improve the outcomes as well. So you should aim to exercise about 2.5 hours a week in divided time. So the other thing is, of course, know about your risks. As I said before, some families has incidents, lots of breast cancers in their family. You can see that Angelina Jolie, who has BRCA1, she took a drastic step and removed both her breasts because her mom, her aunt, and her grandmother had a disease. And it turned out that she had that, what we call a susceptibility gene. But so you need to, there are genetic services in Malaysia. You speak to your doctor to get referred.
Genetic testing to help in early detection?
Just because you have a genetic problem, you have a gene that suggests that you might have got the risk, does not mean you're going to have cancer. So it depends on what gene is abnormal. Make sure you take steps to do the screening, because screening is what saves lives, because it detects early cancer.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Azura. I know you're a very busy person. And thank you so much for spending 20 minutes with me to talk about bringing more awareness about breast cancer. And also want to take this opportunity, you know, to say thank you, you know, to frontliners, doctors like yourself, being a caregiver, a doctor during, I mean, it's a tough job under normal, you know, circumstances, but with the COVID-19 pandemic, we are faced with new and more unexpected challenges. And as such, we do want to celebrate and recognize their contribution. And Once again, thank you so much, Dr. Azura, and I wish you
the best. Thank you for having me.